Well, I've been interested in animals really all my life. I've been an avid birder since the age of 12. And more recently, my interest has focused to some extent on historical natural history. How has the flora and fauna of a region changed over time? And when you look at the history of Illinois, indeed the eastern United States and Canada, the passenger pigeon looms as this incredible story, this incredible phenomenon that really highlights how abundant in life this region and continent were. So you had, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions, of birds, which meant that there was a resource base that could support it. So it was just an incredible story. And then the speed with which human beings depleted that resource really grabbed me as well, and presents messages that are relevant for today.
Yeah, it's hard, I would think, for people today to really understand how prevalent the passenger pigeon was at one point. I mean, because we don't see them now, it's hard for people to understand that they once darkened the skies when they flew through the areas. Is that make it hard to reach out to people on this because they just can't recall a time when that was the case?
Well, it might. And there's so many really powerful descriptions that help. I mean, make those images clear. But you raise a really interesting point, and that's sort of a problem in that every generation has its baseline data. So if you were interested in birds in the 1850s, you would go out and you'd see, you know, these maybe, you know, 100 million passenger pigeons, and then your children, would be seeing fewer. And so every generation, I mean, some species certainly have done better over time, But what we remember, I mean, I remember areas that I used to go birding that simply don't exist anymore, or certain species you see many fewer of. So that's a problem, but that's the value of history is, you know, it reminds us of what was here, and hopefully that affects how we make decisions for the future.
It was a quick demise for the passenger pigeon, though, from what you had written that I believe 1914, the last of the species passed away in captivity. How did this happen so fast? Because in the 1800s, very prevalent. In the early 1900s, they were gone. How did this occur?
Well, they were really hunted into extinction. Not hunting like we do today. This was market hunting. There were people anywhere from maybe 600 to 2,500 hunters who did nothing but chase the birds all year long. With the telegraph, information of the birds' whereabouts was distributed widely and quickly. With trains, with railroads, it meant that, you know, if you killed the birds in northern Michigan or in the Missouri Ozarks, you could get them to a train station and they could be sent to the markets of urban markets of the Midwest and East. So the birds weren't able to reproduce. Their breeding grounds, people came in and hunted, the birds were driven off. And so you had neither new birds being added to the population, and you had this unrelenting slaughter. It just prevented the birds from maintaining themselves.
We're talking with Joel Greenberg. He has written the book, A Feathered River Across the Sky. It's about the life and legacy of the passenger pigeon. He's going to be speaking at the Illinois State Museum here in Springfield coming up on Wednesday. Joel, was anyone pushing for conservation measures during this time? I mean, was that part of the discussion? I know it was a different time that wasn't always thought about, but somebody had to say, hey, this is going a bit too far.
Well, there were individuals who said that, but there was nothing anywhere near a coordinated effort to do so. Only one state ever banned the killing of passenger pigeons. That was Michigan in 1897, at a time when the birds were already gone. It's also interesting that there was this industry based on the killing and transport and selling of passenger pigeons, and they manufactured things to deny what was becoming clear to some, that the birds were decreasing. So in reality, the birds nested once a year, and they produced one egg. So some of the stories out there were, oh, don't worry, we killed lots of them here, but they're going to breed 10 more times this year. And the birds are moving their location. They're no longer in the Midwest. They've moved to Arizona. I mean, there were all these little fables being offered as justification for the killing, or if not even justification, trying to allay fears, should anyone have any, to withstand any. Also, I should say, too, at that point, the federal government was not involved in conservation on the federal level. So the loss of the pigeon, the loss of other North American wildlife like the bison, helped spawn the country's first great environmental movement. And there were laws that were put in place that would have enabled the federal government to protect some of these birds. But those laws, that consciousness simply didn't exist in the 19th century.
It seems on issues like this, sometimes we like to think that we're much smarter than people that came before us, that we know better now, and we would have seen evidence of the problems before they got to the point of where it wiped out this complete species. But you point out this is a bit of a cautionary tale for people today as well to pay attention to.
Absolutely. I mean, so in this country, we no longer slaughter birds like we did in the 19th century. And, you know, that's a good thing from my perspective. But, you know, as time goes on, we've learned that there are other things that are done that also damage the web of life. And so, you know, Silent Spring, Rachel Carson's book about the impacts that pesticides have on birds, came out in, what, the 60s. And so that started the country's second great environmental movement. And out of that were laws like the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Endangered Species Act. So we do have, and the Endangered Species Act was a commitment by this country that we're not going to let species become extinct, or at least not without trying. So, you know, we have learned things, and science is much better developed. Now, the Endangered Species Act is currently under attack, and, you know, for people who care about nature, I would say that, you know, one lesson, one message would be to let your lawmakers know that you think conservation laws like the Endangered Species Act have to be kept strong.